Hello, everyone. We have a very big room here, and this is the only room that was available, so we apologize for that, but the UN is quite tight in terms of location of rooms. I would be asking you, those that are sitting in the rows over there, if you could approach, it will make this a little bit more intimate. If you could kindly come to the forefront, that would be very much appreciated. I mean, this room is not full, but this issue is a very important one. So I believe that the turnout today is not a demonstration that this issue is not important. I believe that the discussion that we are going to have is very much relevant to the United Nations, to the human rights agenda, and we are, in that regard, very pleased to have you here. So I will wait a little bit till you sit down, and then we are going to start with the event. First of all, I introduce myself. I am the Deputy Permanent Representative of Argentina to the United Nations. And my name is Matteo Estremet. I am pleased to moderate this panel. This is something that I did last year, also regarding the same subject. So it's a privilege and an honor for me to do it again, in the sense that the issue that we are going to discuss today is of the utmost importance and priority for countries of my region in particular, but for others also. In that sense, I would like to again welcome you. As you know, this side event is organized by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and the purpose of this is to launch the recommended principles and guidelines on human rights at international borders. Principles and guidelines were prepared by the Office of the High Commission and the High Commissioner on Human Rights. We are honored to have with us an important number of high-level experts on this issue. So I believe that it will be a good opportunity to exchange and to have an interactive dialogue with them. After listening to the distinguished panelists, we will open the floor to discussion, and in order to give everyone the opportunity to intervene, I would like to call on panelists to be concise and leave the time for questions by the audience. I was saying at the beginning that this is a very relevant and important question. Reading the report of the Secretary General and taking a look and considering the very important document that is going to be launched today, I believe that we cannot overemphasize the pertinence of this discussion here at the United Nations at this moment. As you know, and as it is highlighted in the report of Secretary General, it is estimated that there are 35 million international migrants worldwide under the age of 20 and 11 million between the ages of 15 and 19 years old. So this is one demonstration of the magnitude of when we speak of, in particular in the case of the migrant tides, of what we are facing as a challenge, but also as an opportunity as an international community to deal with these issues. And when we discussed this last year, we underscore that the several challenges that we face regarding the promotion and protection of human rights in international borders. And in particular, what we was emphasized that at this during these meetings, and it's also emphasized in the report of the Secretary General and several other reports, and in the guidance and principles prepared by the Office of the High Commissioner, is that international borders are not zones of exclusion or exception of human rights obligations. So this is, I believe, the main message that we should bring from this meeting, and I hope that we are going to have a discussion on that in particular, because unfortunately, some of the things that we saw in recent times would led us to believe that border governance is prompted solely on national security considerations, and this does imply that human rights do not apply there. And really, this is not the case, and this is something that we as members of the international community and civil society and all stakeholders should be very aware of, and we should be also very vocal about. So I will stop there, because you come to here to distinguished panelists, and I will start with the our first speaker and the opening remarks by Mr. Ivan Simonovic. As you know, he is the Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights at the United Nations. And I'm not going to introduce Mr. Simonovic. He does not need any introduction. We all know him very well, and we appreciate very much the work that he has been doing here in New York on these issues. So, Ivan, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, esteemed panelists, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. Today, more than 232 million people live outside their country of origin. There are more international migrants in the world than at any other time in the history, and this trend is here to stay. From the Mediterranean to the Indian Ocean and the deserts of the United States of America, we continue to see countless avoidable deaths of migrants in the course of their journeys. This year, in the Mediterranean, where I'm coming from alone, more than 3,000 people died while trying to cross the sea, whilst another 120,000 were rescued. There are many reasons why migrants leave their countries of origin: to escape poverty, discrimination, persecution, reunite with their families, or to seek a better job of life elsewhere. In the pursuit of their fortunes, they are using various ways. They are crossing or attempt to cross borders by air, sea, or land, often at a great personal risk. Tightened control of international borders, increased border surveillance measures, and the reduction of channels for regular entry force migrants to seek more precarious and dangerous avenues to arrive at their destinations. All too often, they fall prey to traffickers and smugglers who exploit their vulnerability. Migrants face a number of human rights violations when they cross borders: discrimination, arbitrary detention, unlawful profiling, ill treatment, and sometimes torture, to name just a few. Dangerous interception and pushback operations are common and may lead to death. One of the problems is that border governance, as a chairperson has already mentioned, is often prompted solely by national security considerations and are perceived as zones of exception of human rights obligations. Policies curtailing migration often result in the diversion of migrants into irregular channels where vulnerabilities are much increased. Human rights are not reserves for citizens only or for people with visas. their inalienable right of every individual, regardless of his or her location and migration status. A tendency to promote law enforcement and security paradigms at the expense of human rights dehumanizes irregular migrants, enabling a climate of violence against them and further depriving them of the full protection of law. Against this background, I'm pleased to launch OACHR recommended principles and guidelines on human rights at international borders. These are guidelines aimed at translating the international human rights framework into practical measures for border governance. The guidelines which accompany the report of the Secretary General on the protection of migrants, and it is a document A/69/277, were presented to the 69th session of the General Assembly yesterday, and they are available online on the web page of OHCHR. The recommended principles and guidelines on human rights and international borders are aimed primarily at states. They seek to support them in fulfilling their border governance obligations in accordance with international human rights law and other relevant standards. However, they may also be useful for other actors, including international organizations and civil society concerned with border governance. The document rests on three basic principles. First, the primacy of human rights law. Second, the principle of non-discrimination. And third, assistance and protection from harm. While recognizes that states have legitimate interests when they exercise immigration controls, they must also respect, protect, and fulfill the human rights of migrants at borders. All migrants arriving by land, air, or sea, regardless of their migration status or circumstances, are entitled to equal respect for and protection of their human rights without discrimination of any kind. The 10 guidelines contain practical border governance measures. So what are the main messages? First, states should improve knowledge and address negative perceptions of migrants, including through media and by ensuring the term illegal is not used to refer to migrants in irregular situations. Second, relevant domestic legislations need to be brought in line with international human rights standards. This means ensuring that provisions of non-discrimination, mandatory protection and assistance, non-criminalization, accountability, and access to justice and redress are enshrined within national legislation. Third, border authorities need to be trained to ensure that they are able to comply with human rights standards. Adequate resources and proper mechanisms need to be put in place to assist to that end. Fourth, rescue operations should ensure that human rights, safety, and dignity of all persons at risk are respected. Relieving imminent danger to lives and ensuring safety should be the priority for border authorities as well as private shipmasters. Fifth, at places of rescue, interception or disembarkation, immediate assistance should be provided where necessary. This should include medical care, provision of adequate food and water, blankets, clothing, sanitary items, and shelter. Six human rights-based approaches to screening and interviewing people at borders require individualized determination of situations and reasons for entry, as well as the appropriate identification of individuals at particular risk who should be referred on for particular attention. Border authorities, and it's number seven, should be able to rapidly identify and refer migrants who may be at risk, particularly children, pregnant or breastfeeding women, or victims of violence, including sexual and gender-based violence. It is also essential that service providers, such as interpreters, legal aid, and health service workers, are present at international borders. Eighth, alternatives to detention should always be sought for irregular migrants. Any deprivation of liberty should only be a measure of last resort, and the reasons for detention should be clearly defined in law, be of limited duration, necessary, and proportionate. Children should never be detained on the basis of their or their parents' migration status. Nine, any decisions to remove or return migrants should be carried out in accordance with international law and due procedural guarantees, including upholding the principle of non-refoulement and the prohibition of collective expulsion. And finally, tenth, strong bilateral, regional, and international cooperation is needed in order to promote human rights-based, equitable, dignified, lawful, and evidence-based migration and border government measures. The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights looks forward to further engage with member states, UN agencies, human rights mechanisms, civil society organizations, and private actors for the effective implementation of these principles and guidelines. They are only valuable if they are being used and implemented. Thank you very much for your attention.
We thank you, Mr. Simonovic, for this presentation, and in particular for the message of a human rights-based approach on migration and against the dehumanization of migrants. And I believe that the principles that you launch are to be commended. And this is a very important piece of work that, as you said, should be translated into concrete action, both at the national, regional, and international level. So we hope we can have further action here at the United Nations and more a follow-up on these issues when we discuss migration in particular. I would like to just mention that this event is being transmitted by the webcast, so I would also encourage you to convey this to your partners in order for to get more dissemination of the event. It's going to be in the webpage of the United Nations, so it's also important to reach out to others saying that the event can be transmitted to others and can be recorded. So with that, I would like to turn to Ambassador Thomas Meyer-Hartig, the head of delegation of the European Union to the United Nations in New York. He has been in that position since October 2011. We welcome Ambassador Meyer-Hartig, and we look forward to hearing the views of the ambassador on how the Office of the High Commissioners on Human Rights Principles and Guidelines could assist the European Union in addressing the arrival of migrants at international borders. So, Excellency, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I'm very grateful for this occasion, and I'm grateful for those who have taken the time to come here. I felt a certain sympathy with our participants whom you told to come down and get closer to the center of the room, because they were basically sitting where we normally sit as European Union in these meetings. So it's a good thing to have you now around this table and closer by. Let me say, you've asked me to start with by saying how we think that the Office of the High Commissioner can help us. I would say they have already helped us. We had a very good meeting, in fact, yesterday, I understand, in Brussels, in which the Office of the High Commissioner presented also to us the set of recommended principles and guidelines on human rights at international borders that the Assistant Secretary General has just presented to you. And for us, this is a very important message because, I mean, and the Assistant Secretary General also spoke about these dreadful tragedies that we are facing in the Mediterranean. They have been the subject, and rightly so, of massive international attention. The Pope has spoken about it, has been to Lampedusa, and I think we all know that the situation as it is cannot continue. The issue, of course, is that anybody who deals with border controls is facing and continuously faces a security issue. And of course, we have to make sure of our security, but it is important that we also are absolutely clear that safeguarding our security has to be compatible and fully compatible, in particular with the protection of fundamental human rights. And it cannot be possible, and it is not acceptable from our point of view, that you have that kind of system and that it is not compatible with fundamental human rights. I would perhaps say a few words partly about our operations and those of our member states in the sea, about Frontex, because they, of course, are confronted with this challenge. I also wanted to say a particular word about the way one is meant to deal with children, and we deal with children, and our own legislation on the subject deals with children, because that is a particular challenge when you look at these issues. As I said, we have to balance the rights of migrants against security concerns, but we have to do it in a manner that is fully compatible with the defense of human rights. You're aware that we have this operation at the sea, we're Frontex in the Mediterranean, and evidently this operation is essential to ensure an effective border control. And while I will admit that the Frontex agency is not a search and rescue body, I also have to make the point that it can and does enhance the capacity of member states to deal with search and rescue situations through increased technical and operational support, such as, for instance, the reinforced joint operation Triton. And I would insist that every effort should be made, must be made, to avoid loss of life at sea, irrespective of the nationality or the status of the person in distress. And by the way, speaking of the issue of the status, often the terminology is lost, used of speaking of an illegal migrant. The correct terminology, and the Office of the High Commissioner has reminded us repeatedly, is that we have irregular migrants. It's not an issue of illegality. Any vessel, whether commercial or state vessel, has the duty to assist persons in distress at sea. In patrolling seas, Coast Guard vessels are obliged to respect international law on search and rescue, and also the principle of non-refoulement, which is extremely important to us, because there's also, of course, the issue of asylum seekers. They're economic migrants, but also asylum seekers. And if an asylum seeker comes to our shores, to one of our country, he's entitled to protection under our rules, and we're not allowed to send him back to the country where he could be persecuted all over again. I would also say, when it comes to the activities of Frontex, that our own regulations provide a common definition of three emergency situations: uncertainty, alert, distress, and they require border guards, to contact the responsible rescue coordination center already at place. I would then perhaps say a word also, as I said earlier on, about the legislative framework that we have within the European Union. Because, of course, we ourselves are committed to the promotion and protection of fundamental rights of migrants, and our policies are founded on the principles of non-discrimination, proportionality, non-refoulement, the principle I just explained, access to justice, and the best interests of children. Obviously, in the everyday application of our rules, also by our own member states, there are instances when these principles are not respected, and regrettably too many, in a satisfactory and appropriate manner. And for all these reasons, we also have a system within the European Union, where the European institutions control the application of these rules. And in particular, as I already said, fundamental rights are given increased priority in the activities of Frontex. Border guards coordinate in operations coordinated by Frontex must be trained in fundamental rights. They have adopted a fundamental rights strategy, and they have also a system within their own to do it, and a consultative forum which involves relevant organizations and NGOs. But again, I would say that the recommended principles and guidelines also provide additional very important guidance to us. We believe that the rules we have, which oblige our institutions to integrate fundamental rights in border management into border management practices, are compatible with these recommended principles and guidelines. But it's not only, as I said, an issue of the rules, but also of the application. And for us, the dialogue that has been established with the Office of the High Commissioner is of very great importance. And perhaps just a few words, because it's so central and so many tragedies happen exactly in this area, as I said, on the rights of children. In the area of migration, asylum and border management, we need to promote, and we try to do it, a child rights approach, both in our legislative work and in policy initiatives, as well as in the application and in the monitoring of the application of our legislation. Children, whether accompanied or not, require special attention from the moment of their arrival at our borders, during their stay, and eventually if the decision is taken for them to return, also in the case of return. Each decision affecting a child must be made on a case-by-case basis, with the best interests of the child being our guiding principles. Border guards must give particular attention to children when these travel in a regular manner through authorized border crossing points, but also when traveling outside of border crossing points. That is to say that emergency care must also be provided to children that are intercepted at sea in Frontex operation because of the difficult conditions of their journey. Evidently, emergency care must be provided to everyone who is found in these circumstances, but more specifically also because of their special need to children. They need to be promptly identified and their needs must be assessed. Any person claiming to be a child should indeed be treated as a child, because that's the starting point. Children granted international protection must be given full access to education in the same way as nationals. A legal guardian must be designated for unaccompanied minors, granting them international protection. And although the possibility, I refer to something that the Assistant Secretary General just said, of detention of minors exists under our migration and asylum law, we promote alternatives to detention vis-à-vis member states. Detention, from our point of view, is a measure of last resort when it comes to children, and for the shortest time possible. And any form of detention must always be subject to the prior assessment of children's best interests. There are some challenges that we face in this field, more specifically, as I said earlier on, determining the age of a person, whether it's really a child. But the starting point is that if somebody says he or she is a child, we start out with this, and we cannot sort of deny it simply because we don't believe it. In case of doubt, the benefit of doubt has to be in favor of the person claiming that he or she is a child. And as I said earlier on, the challenge still is, the main challenge is the one of detention. Children should, in principle, not be detained. I would agree with what was said as that, and alternatives should be provided. And again, as I said, it's always good, and it's a good occasion, and that's in fact the purpose of this meeting, to remind us of the rules that exist in this field. And these rules are also guidelines for us, and more specifically in the European Union, first of all because of the challenges we are facing, but also because of the standards we are committed to uphold. But every time, the real issue, as I said, is in the implementation of these rules, and as I said, our institutions do all they can to protect fundamental rights in pursuit of these policies, including by monitoring the correct application of our own legislation by the member states who apply it on the ground in practice. But I'm open to a discussion and further comments, and I'm looking forward to the prolongation of this meeting. Thank you very much.
I thank you, Ambassador Harding, for your words, in particular for explaining what the European Union is doing in this regard. And in particular, for a couple of things. First, reminded us about the compatibility between both control and human rights, and also reiterating one concept that is very dear to us, that there is no illegal migration. And in the end, at least in our view, of course, migration is a human right, so there cannot be illegal migration in that sense. With that, I will turn to the next speaker. I will give the floor to Mr. Udo Jans, Director of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Liaison Officer in New York. The UNHCR has been a key partner in development of the guidelines we are launching today, and has also produced relevant guidance in this regard. In fact, the Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights guidelines must be read in conjunction with the guidelines provided by UNHCR, including the 10-point plan of action on refugee protection and mixed migration, which emphasizes the need for protection sensitive entry systems and international border. But I will let Mr. Jans develop that idea further. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for those warm introductory remarks, and welcome to my fellow panelists, and the very strong emphasis that you, Thomas, put on fundamental human rights, from which we, of course, start off with when we discuss protection at borders. I would like to thank the High Commissioner for Human Rights for the initiative to produce these principles and guidelines on human rights at international borders, which, of course, in many ways builds on what my own office has developed as guidance materials over the years for a particular group that increasingly gets caught in the web of mixed migration, namely asylum seekers, refugees, and others of concern to the office. And hence, I would regard this collaborative effort and your reach out as really a best practice within the current UN family, but even beyond that, and I think it also shows very clearly how the offices can complement each other usefully and practically in that effort. What we would like to highlight is, of course, that those principles and guidelines apply not only to migrants, but to all persons who present themselves at international borders, independent of their legal situation, as has been referred to already, or their personal status or circumstances, but including as well those protected under other relevant international human rights instruments, including asylum seekers, refugees, and the stateless of this world. All these categories are equally affected by the situation that arises at international borders, and of course are protected under international law. The world today is a complex one, with heightened conflict and persecution, where refugees do not necessarily obtain easy access to seek asylum and protection despite state obligations towards the refugee protection regime. UNHCR acknowledges that border controls, of course, are essential for combating crime, including smuggling and trafficking. It is, however, from our point of view, important that states institute practical protection safeguards, institute a protection-sensitive border control mechanism to ensure that such measures are not applied in an indiscriminate manner and do not lead to refugees, migrants, and others in need of international protection being returned to countries or territories where their life or liberty may be at risk. Migratory movements often comprise dangerous sea or land voyages, also what you referred to already, often in inhumane conditions, exploitation and abuse. Loss of lives at sea has unfortunately become a devastatingly common seasonal occurrence and reinforces the need for common responsibility to address the many factors driving these flows. These include strengthened responses for refugee and asylum seekers alongside other migration management approaches. This will also include targeted protection responses to the victims of trafficking, including inter-regional approaches towards the arrest and the prosecution of traffickers and smugglers. UNHCR appreciates that the principles and the guidelines purposely recognize and uphold the importance of state compliance with the obligations under international refugee law. We acknowledge further the specific references to refugees, asylum seekers, and the to refugee protection in general in the core guidelines of the document. In short, we welcome the opportunity to continue to collaborate with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights and this important initiative to further provide guidance to states and other relevant stakeholders on how to ensure access and uphold human rights of all persons at international borders. Let me say a word about UNHCR's Protection at Sea initiative. Irregular movements of people across sea borders is now a global phenomenon. Whether you look at the Mediterranean, the Aegean, the Gulf of Aden, the Red Sea, in the Caribbean, etc., across Southeast Asia. Loss of life associated with these movements remains at unacceptably high levels. And those traveling at sea are also at risk of victimization by traffickers and exploitation by smugglers. Obviously, a significant proportion of those traveling by sea are asylum seekers and others of concern to my office, but many others clearly are also in search of other objectives that they may wish to pursue. We are concerned in this context, in the European context, I should say, with the end of one particular instrument that had, with the support of the European Union, rescued, as you have said already, in the course of this year, over 120,000 people in their attempt to cross from the African continent to Europe. In addition to that, we are aware of at least 37,000 individuals rescued by the private merchant ships that are cruising around the Mediterranean, so that this resulted in, without a doubt, in huge life-saving exercises in the course of this year. Mind you, we probably only know the tip of the iceberg, but 3,343 documented deaths just this year alone in attempts to cross the Mediterranean are 3,343 people too many. Unfortunately, that reality is with us, and the gray figure of estimations is much, much, much higher, especially if you do a multi-year study of what has taken place there. Clearly, to stop any large-scale search and rescue operation cannot be the answer. We therefore appeal to governments and regional bodies to do what needs to be done to provide the necessary resources to continue rescue at sea where it matters most, and not just in one particular region, but everywhere. And obviously to look at the same time at the drivers that are the key ingredient to push people to take such desperate steps as sending children on boards without necessarily any accompaniment and resulting more often than not in their death. It is in that vein that UNHCR has launched a global initiative on protection at sea that aims to catalyze action by states, regions, and other stakeholders to limit the loss of life by reinforcing such search and rescue operations and providing alternatives to dangerous sea voyages. Secondly, to ensure that responses to maritime flight and distress at sea are protection sensitive. This means both that regional arrangements for rescue, disembarkation, and surveillance at sea borders incorporate the principles of protection sensitive entry management, and that deterrent, punitive, and burden-sharing responses are avoided to the extent possible. The challenges, as you will appreciate, are formidable. The tool and the frameworks to advance protection at sea exist. We need to build the political will, the capacity, and the sustainable regional approaches to implement them. It is to that end that the High Commissioner's annual dialogue on protection challenges this year will focus on protection at sea, bringing together states, NGOs, the academic community, and other stakeholders to provide an opportunity to develop a broad consensus on rescue at sea, disembarkation, arrangements, and responsibility sharing, and to craft a comprehensive approach to the protection of asylum seekers and refugees at sea. I thank you for your attention.
I thank Mr. Udo Jans for his remarks, and I compliment him for his work in cooperation with the officer of the Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights, and in particular for this initiative on the protection of at sea. I believe that is very relevant, not only in light of the European experience, as was mentioned by Ambassador Mike Harting, but all regions are facing this challenge. And it's very important to have a very solid and sound system with regard to this question. So I would like to turn to Ms. Michelle Klein-Solomon, the permanent observer of the International Organization for Migration, IOM, to the United Nations in New York since 2010. The IOM has provided very valuable contributions to these principles and guidelines. So Ms. Klein-Solomon, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Excellency, Mr. Assistant Secretary General, fellow panelists, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to begin, like the others before me, in thanking the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights for holding today's discussion and for inviting the International Organization for Migration to participate. As was just said, IOM was very happy to contribute to the production of these recommended principles and guidelines, and perhaps even more importantly, to work regularly, directly on the front lines on these issues with migrants, governments, civil society organizations, migrants associations, the media, and more, to try to give practical effect to the human rights principles that were so well outlined in the report that is being launched here today. I, like the other speakers, would like to call attention to the timeliness of this report as we continue to see news daily of the countless tragedies of migrants losing their lives at sea or in other perilous journeys across deserts and borders. It should shock our collective conscience and make us wonder about the risks that migrants are prepared to take to put their lives so fundamentally at risk. These tragedies call attention to the urgent need to translate the international human rights framework into practical border governance measures, as is outlined as the goal of this report. To this end, on the 3rd of October of this year, on the anniversary of the second UN General Assembly High-Level Dialogue on International Migration and Development, at the opening of which we were all called for a moment of silence at the loss of nearly 400 lives at sea. Well, a year later, IOM launched the first of what we hope will be an annual report. We launched it in Lampedusa, called Fatal Journeys, that gives an account of the numbers of migrants who have lost their lives in the effort to cross international borders. As was said about 2014, let me expand those numbers a bit. Our estimates show that in 2013 and 2014 alone, nearly 6,500 migrants have lost their lives in border regions, and that since 2000, there have been at a minimum 20,000 persons who have lost their lives crossing borders. We're quite convinced that these figures only reveal part of the problem, and many of the migrant deaths occur in remote regions of the world and are never registered. Official data on the number of deaths is scarce. The vast majority of governments do not publish official data on migrant deaths, and counting lives lost is left to civil society and the media. We believe it is essential to track these numbers to give it the weight and the importance that it deserves. IOM shares the view articulated in the report that it's crucial to ensure that states protect the rights of all migrants, whatever their status, while effectively controlling their borders. IOM recognizes and respects that governments have the sovereign right to determine which non-nationals may enter and remain in their territories and under what conditions, yet also that this right has to be carried out consistent with international law standards and, in particular, international human rights law. I would like to dedicate the remainder of my time to highlighting just a few ways in which IOM's work gives effect on the ground to the protection of human rights at borders. First, and was said by a few of the other speakers, states are the principal duty bearers in this region, but they need to have the capacity to govern their borders and their migration management regimes in a way that adheres to international standards and particularly protecting human rights. As was outlined in the reports, human rights protection at borders covers a range of practical matters, from ensuring that interview techniques are protection sensitive, that human rights-based approaches to return and removal. In our work, IOM incorporates human rights protection in all of its activities and projects on border management worldwide. We undertake capacity-building initiatives to sensitize border officials to human rights and refugee law and to train them properly to identify and address the needs of vulnerable migrants. As just one example, in 2013, IOM worked with the government of Tunisia to strengthen its capacity to ensure protection-sensitive border management. Through training and coaching, as well as technical support, this assistance enabled the border police to identify and refer refugees and other vulnerable individuals, such as victims of trafficking, unaccompanied minors, and women at risk, to the appropriate procedures and authorities so that their human rights are respected and their specific needs properly addressed. Second, I'd like to call attention to the particular border challenges that arise in cases of emergencies, whether they be in cases of conflict or natural disaster. One important feature of so many of the humanitarian crises that we have seen in recent years, including those ongoing now in Libya, Syria, and Haiti, just to name a few, have involved large-scale movements of populations both within and across borders. What that means in practice is that border posts are often the first officials, the first place to confront people whose lives may have already been put at significant list at risk and whose rights may have been jeopardized or risk being compromised. Many of those people do not fit easily into established protection categories, yet they are vulnerable and require assistance, whether in need of refugee protection or not. To address this situation, IOM has developed the concept of humanitarian border management as part of its efforts to develop a migration crisis operational framework to equip states with response mechanisms that recognize the importance of upholding humane governance and human rights at borders in a situation of extreme pressure. By increasing the awareness of border agencies of the vulnerability of migrants during crisis, and by creating effective mechanisms to address this, humanitarian border management can help contribute to human rights protection for all migrants. We ensure through this that vulnerable migrants have access to emergency care, referrals to appropriate authorities, and similar protective mechanisms as this. Since the launch of this concept, IOM has implemented humanitarian border management projects in Tajikistan, Jordan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan through assessment missions and trainings. Third, and my final point, is because of the pressing nature of so many of the concerns that we've talked about today, IOM takes a needs-first approach to migration, migrant protection. We've heard reference to the situation of trafficking in persons and smuggling of migrants. And as an international community, there has been considerable progress in creating appropriate legal frameworks and mechanisms to better protect persons who are identified as victims of trafficking. And there's a whole host of specific protections and measures that have been taken at national level in many countries to afford appropriate protection, assistance, and even redress in limited circumstances. However, the number of people who benefit from this protection remains incredibly small, and particularly so when compared with the estimated numbers of migrants who continue to live lives of significant exploitation, particularly at borders. In truth, the line that separates a trafficked person from many exploited and abused migrants is blurred at best and difficult to distinguish, particularly in pressing circumstances at a border. And if a migrant is male, young, working without documentation, and doesn't fit the normal stereotype of a woman who's been trafficked for prostitution, it's very unlikely to be screened for identification. So, to address this, we feel that we need, certainly as IOM, and we would encourage others, to adopt a needs-first approach to help bridge that gap, address the needs of individuals first, before you even get to the question of referrals on for addressing particular rights. Because if the needs are not met, the migrants will not survive in order to get on to a next phase. These are just a few of the kinds of examples of work that IOM is doing in this area, absolutely in coordination and collaboration with so many of the others here on the panel and in this room. But it's clear from what we've heard today that there is so very much more work to be done. It is my sincere hope that the launch of this OHCHR report here today will help propel us all to take further, immediate, concrete action to give effect to these principles and guidelines. I thank you very much.
Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Michelle Klein-Solomon. I especially about the contribution of the organization, International Organization of Migrations, and also for flagging this issue of human trafficking that you mentioned at the end. I believe it's also is very relevant to our discussions today. We have the honor to have the chairperson of the Committee on the Protection of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Families, Mr. Señor Francisco Carrión Mena from Ecuador. That's also a very good opportunity to have a discussion on what the committee is doing in this regard. As you know, in the reviews of state parties to the convention, the committee that Mr. Carrión Mena chairs has analyzed issues relevant to the rights of migrants at international borders and has consequently provided insightful concluding observations in that regard. So I would give you the floor, Mr. Carrión Mena, to tell us a little bit more about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and colleagues and ladies and gentlemen. It's really a pleasure to be here in my capacity of chair of the CMW, the Committee on Migrant Workers, because in one way we are sort of the poor brother of the whole system, although the migration issue or the migration phenomenon, not a problem, is in the top of the agenda. We have already heard some presentations regarding the importance, the tragedies that migration is in our day-to-day work and day-to-day concerns. That's why, as chair of the CMW, I would like, of course, to thank the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights on organizing this event, and to congratulate, of course, the Office for the excellent work that they have done regarding the recommended principles and guidelines on human rights at international borders. This publication, I think, it's a very useful and practical tool for all states, and I underline all states, on how to mainstream human rights into their border migration policies in line with the convention and jurisprudence of our committee. I want to stress that migration is not only an important economic and social phenomenon with over 230 million international migrants worldwide, but especially, essentially, a human rights issue. Migration affects almost every country in the world, and south-south migration is now as common as south-north migration. North-south migration is now estimated at 3 or 6% of all international migration. As populations age and shrink in developed countries while increasing dramatically in developing countries, international migration will continue to grow as an international phenomenon. Migrants make significant and essential contributions to the economic, social, and cultural development of their host countries and their communities back home. But too often, these contributions are unrecognized, and instead, the public debate is dominated by xenophobic attitudes and discrimination. Migrants suffer from exploitation, xenophobic violence, and abuse, especially migrants in irregular situation. As long as war, poverty, and other causes persist, thousands are prepared to risk their lives searching for safety, stability, and work. Increased border surveillance and securitization, together with a drastic reduction of avenues for legal migrations, force migrants to seek more perilous routes and to rely on smugglers and traffickers. Consequently, the overall effect of restrictive state law enforcement policies has been to put migrants at greater risks and render them more vulnerable to human rights abuses and violations during the various phases of the migration journey. The convention, our convention, requires all states to cooperate with a view to promoting sound, equitable, and human conditions for international migration of workers. The CMW, my committee, notes that coordinated policies which ensure the migrant workers have access to regular channels of migrations based on actual and projected labor market needs at all skills levels and resources are an important element of such cooperation. The committee further notes that by making regular channels of migration available, states' parties also contribute to the aim of preventing and eliminating illegal and clandestine movements and employment of migrant workers in an irregular situation. Even the Secretary General, in his opening remarks to the Global Forum of Migration and Development held in Stockholm in May 2014, also called the states to rely around the common goal of creating regular, safe, and orderly channels of migration and optimize the benefits of the phenomenon. That's why I invite the developed countries, the receiving countries, to ratify the convention. I was very well impressed by the words, the remarks made by the representative of the EU, and I invite the EU as a bloc to ratify this convention because only establishes a sort of order in the human rights instruments that Europe already has. Criminalizing people for crossing or attempting to cross borders is disproportionate to migration governance. It contributes to rising intolerance and xenophobia and to social exclusion and, of migrants. The committee considers the crossing of border of a country in an unauthorized manner or without proper documentation or overstaying a permit of stay does not constitute a regulated migration and leads to unnecessary detention. While irregular entry and stay may constitute administrative offenses, they are not crimes per se against persons, property, or national security. States, as such, should decriminalize immigration offenses, which are administrative in nature and not criminal. The committee is very much concerned about migrants in detention. Migrants in detention can be exposed to inadequate conditions, including the deplorable living conditions, lack of adequate psychological and medical care, violence, overcrowding, poor sanitary facilities, lack of separate sex facilities, and inadequate nutrition, lack of monitoring of the condition of the detention, complaint mechanism and human rights training for the detention authorities aggravate the plight of migrants in detention. The committee has continuously held the states should seek alternatives to detention and that deprivation of liberty in the context of migration should be a measure of last resort and the result of individual determination. The committee is of the view that children should not be detained based on migratory status or that of their parents, as this constitutes a child's rights violation. Millions of children are affected by immigration detention worldwide and are particularly vulnerable to human rights violations. The immigration detention of children has been shown to have long-lasting mental and physical health implications. In all actions concerning children, the best interest of the child should be the primary consideration, and given the detrimental effects that the detention can have on children, this obligation implies the states should never detain children based on their migration status or that of their parents. We have, weeks ago, a tremendous and tragic situation in the Mexican-U.S. Border, as you all know. States need to enact legislation and other reforms to eliminate all forms of discrimination against migrants, all in areas under their jurisdiction, including an international borders, strengthen law of enforcement and criminal justice responses to xenophobia and violence, and enable migrants the access to justice, create multi-stakeholders campaigns to end negative and inaccurate public messages and promote tolerance and respect for migrants, and collect and disseminate accurate data on discrimination and on the positive contributions that migrants make to the development of both their host countries and home opportunities. In addition, states need to strengthen border governance, including training of human rights, develop an adequate monitoring and accountability mechanism for all border authorities, provide emergency assistance where warranted and ensure due process of law in cases of expulsion. At this point, I would like to be grateful to the NGOs that work in this issue, because they have been a very strong providers of information for the work of the committee. States should implement the above recommended principles and guidelines as part of their border migration policies. States should also consider ratifying the Convention on the Protection of All Rights of the Rights of All Migrant Workers and Members of Their Family. With only 47 states parties since the adoption of almost 20 years ago, the lack of political will to stand up for the rights of migrant workers is the biggest challenge for their protection and these very vulnerable group of human beings. Migrants are more than just agents of economic development and outputs. They are not only workers, they are human beings. They are first and foremost human beings with human rights. The committee supports the promotion and protection of human rights of all migrant workers and members of their families and advocates for a human rights-based approach to migration policies and practices, including international borders. Thank you very much.
Soy yo quien le agradece al señor Carrión Mena. Thank you very much for your presentation and for the important work of the committee in particular. You referred to your committee as a proof brother. We hope that that won't be the case in the future, that we are going to have more countries ratifying the convention. So I echo your call on countries to be part of the convention. It's a source of some concern for us that of the 42 countries that are part of the convention, most of us are from the global south and there are no developed countries. So it's an issue that I believe that deserves our attention. Thank you again, Mr. Carrión Mena. Finally, I will give the floor to Ms. Catherine Tacta-Quinn. I'm sorry about the pronunciation of your last name, but you correct me. Ms. Tacta-Quinn is the Executive Director of the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights, a member of the Global Coalition on Migration. The NNIRR is a U.S. organization composed of local coalitions that works to defend and expand the rights of all migrants and refugees in the country, with a particular focus on the human rights of migrants in the U.S.-Mexico border. Network and the Global Coalition on Migration have been key partners of the Office of the High Commissioner in the drafting of the principles and guidelines. The floor is yours, Ms. Tacta-Quinn. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my greetings to the other members of this esteemed panel. We are indeed grateful to contribute to this welcoming event for the recommended principles and guidelines for human rights at international borders. We do look forward to the days, the months, no doubt the years of advocacy and engagement with states and other stakeholders to gain support for the human rights affirmed in this important document. We would like to thank as well the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights for its commitment and leadership and for its invitation to many of us in civil society, including others who are here today, to participate in the process of developing this document and in making it the best possible effort. We need only reflect on recent days to identify specific situations, some of them have been mentioned here on this panel, in which the human rights of migrants have been undermined as they attempted to cross international borders, where they have suffered bodily harm due to punitive enforcement policies, or where they have tragically perished at sea in crossing deserts, or met other violence that is all too common in these precarious situations. A couple of years ago, under the auspices of another international partner, Migrants' Rights International, advocates from Asia, Africa, Europe, South America, and the U.S.-Mexico border region met in Geneva to share and compare experiences on border conditions and issues. We were at times surprised by the variety of environments, histories, sources of conflict along the different migration corridors. But we were not surprised by the strong and similar threads of border stories at the grassroots level. We were alarmed by the persistent increase of borders in militarized environments, by a lack of transparency and accountability of border enforcement programs, and we were hugely disappointed by what seemed to be a very cloudy future in addressing what had already emerged clearly as a human rights crisis at borders. We collectively agreed that a greater emphasis on human rights protections was imperative, and we needed greater institutional leadership at the international level to help strengthen our advocacy at regional and national levels in all their complexities. I am proud to include human rights defenders working on the front lines among the leaders and members of my organization who are among those consulted then and in the course of the development of this document. Reflecting on the release of this document, Cristian Ramirez, director of the Southern Borders Community Coalition based in San Diego, California, commented, "As nation states continue to criminalize migration and militarize international borders, it is imperative for the international community to ensure that nation states uphold their obligations to uphold human rights and human dignity. Tragically, the rights and dignity of border residents have been trampled upon by policies and strategies that militarize communities, disrupt daily life, and endanger the lives of border residents and migrants. The tens of millions of people who call the boundary between Mexico and the United States home are heartened by the OHCHR's concerns over the state of human rights in our region." Isabel Garcia, a longtime attorney and public defender in Tucson, Arizona, and a spokesperson for the Coalición de Derechos Humanos, the Human Rights Coalition, also commented, "As borders across the world become highly militarized and policed, basic human rights, including the right to life itself, are being trampled in an unprecedented and alarming fashion. From the wholesale, unnecessary death of thousands of border crossers to the painful separation of families, communities along the Arizona-Sonora border, they live direct consequences of U.S. policies, economic restructuring, and the indifference, ignorance, and fear of the U.S. body politic." She added, "It thus becomes imperative that governments and the international community focus primary attention on the human rights crisis occurring at the crossroads of our intersecting, conflicting interests played out on these fragile and battered regions. It is here where this document can be most useful, allowing affected peoples to raise human rights principles to bring justice and dramatic change in the management of borders." Eduardo Canales, coordinator of the South Texas Human Rights Center, who often spends many hours each week helping to put up water stations in the vast Texas borderlands, including the private lands of ranchers, very much a needs-first approach, commented that these principles and guidelines can help to challenge, quote, "the cloak of secrecy on detaining and processing migrants by the Border Patrol, practices that are decidedly punitive and discretionary." Clearly, the initiative to create this document has been more than welcome and encouraging for policy advocates and those working every day in border environments to ensure the safety and well-being of all migrants. The principles locate human rights and non-discrimination at the center of border governance. Now that we are here, where we have a document which we believe is a strong one, we need to commit to bringing its recommended principles and guidelines to life. We will not be satisfied with these 25-some pages simply being a nice document drafted in 2014, but which remains largely invisible and will not play a role in shifting the narrative on the necessity of human rights at international borders. In developing the document, there was some care and attention to ensuring that it included throughout references to the particular migration of women, that it recognized that border policies should also reflect the best interests of the child, and I was very heartened to hear that repeated here on this panel, that we understood the particular situations at land borders and migrants at sea. Additionally, we have stressed that the right of due process should be afforded to all, regardless of status. We certainly look forward to a time when children are not forced to migrate and when they will not be placed in detention centers and deported, when they are only seeking safety and the reunification with their families. We have much to do. We believe the recommended guidelines provide a solid avenue for states to consider in reviewing and considering their various policies and practices. For civil society, these are extremely useful tools. Many are drawn from specific and proposed practices that we've gathered internationally. They can not only ensure rights and protections, but we believe they can contribute to safe and humane border crossings, and they will help us to save lives. And that really has to be one of our bottom lines. For all that, we are heartened, however, by the release of these principles and guidelines reaffirming core human rights, we are mindful that we are facing in the moment both complex political and economic dynamics within and among bordering countries, as well as many desperate life and death situations displacing and driving migrants, including children of all ages, across international borders, or to at least attempt to do so. These immediate trying situations tear at our hearts and often occupy most of our time. Surely what has continued to be uppermost in our minds these past months has been the continuing stories of the loss of lives at sea in the Mediterranean, the heartrending news of tens of thousands of Central American children crossing the U.S.-Mexico border as they flee untold levels of violence in their home countries, and the less public news about the many children who have perished attempting to cross borders to safety. We hope this document contributes to the growing discourse and body of proposals on how to describe and address what is broadly termed as migrants in crisis or migrants in distress. In our view, migrants at borders presently occupy a significant portion of this arena, and we hope that what is articulated here will help to guide governmental responses as called for example, during the UN High-Level Dialogue on International Migration and Development just a year ago. Some of you may recall at the time that Global Civil Society brought forward a 5-year, 8-point agenda, which included attention to the trauma of migrants in transit and at borders. We believe this reaffirmation of rights and protections that is in this document is a critical anchor to the diligent work that must be undertaken to address both immediate and long-term situations, and will very much be a part of that 5-year, 8-point plan, I think, of civil society. We do understand that in most cases, change does not take place overnight. Next year, we will celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Migrant Workers Convention. And as has been stated, we're still seeking many, many, many more ratifications, as well as vigorous adherence. We do not want to see these principles and guidelines to simply collect dust on a shelf or become an unopened file on our computers. We urge diligent attention and allocation of adequate resources to give these principles and guidelines much needed momentum. We must all challenge ourselves to actively promote these recommended principles and guidelines, to commit to their vision and to their intention, to work towards a better world in which international borders are places of safety, that respect rights and recognize justice, that embrace the reunification of families, and that facilitate brighter futures for all. Finally, I would like, on behalf of those of us in civil society, to ask all of you to join us in another welcoming event at 5 p.m. today across the street at the Church Center of the UN on the 8th floor. As an incentive, we will have food and drink. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I would like to, in particular, commend you for your work, and through you to the rest of, to organizations of civil society. For raising awareness about this, and I entirely share that these guidelines and principles should not be just a nice document, but should be something that is implemented both at national, regional, and international levels. We have less than 10 minutes to go, and I'm sorry that we are not going to have an opportunity to have a very lively exchange of views. Sometimes that happens. I will take three questions and comments from the floor, and I will revert to the panel in order to do their concluding remarks. I identified my good friends, the deputy representative of El Salvador, Ambassador Hasbun. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much to Argentina and the Office of the High Commissioner. I think there's no surprise that I was just like going like this the whole hour and a half that I was listening to all the interventions, and it is no surprise my country being absolutely in line with what has been said here. My country has the sad duty of actually being part of the tragedy that has been described here, especially when you're talking about the particular cases of the migrants, both kids and adults, that are crossing every single day in an irregular fashion by land, the borders of Guatemala and Mexico to come here to the U.S. So we live in flesh and blood, everything that has been described here. So I just would like to make just a few comments really quickly, going from the general to the really specific. The first one is, it doesn't really matter if we just keep saying over and over again that human rights are erga omnes. The more we look, the more we identify gaps in which we see like thousands and millions of people falling through the cracks. But particularly in cases when it might sound even ironic, but people that should be covered for two or more regimes, when you have overlapping regimes, are the ones that actually tend to fall through the cracks because nobody, in terms of states or actors or regimes themselves, take much responsibility for what's going on. In that global, across-the-board kind of perspective, my country sees three main groups that you will call vulnerable groups that are particularly in need of strengthened international action. One of them being, obviously, migrants. The other one being persons over 60, older persons, and the other ones being persons that are actually discriminated against due to their sexual orientation and gender identity. So this event, dealing with one of those big gaps that we see, then the more we look into it, the more we see like small little gaps that you have within it. We really, really commend, and we are extremely thankful for the interagency work that has produced the guidelines, because they come really, really timely for us. After many different news that have been coming from different parts of the country, my government, together with Honduras and Guatemala, are putting forth a first-time resolution on migrant children and adolescents that was just presented yesterday to the delegations here in the United Nations. And we thank all the delegations that have been coming, and hopefully we will come with an intergovernmentally negotiated document that will take into account the guidelines. So we really, really thank you for actually choosing this time of the year for presenting the guidelines. They're going to be a fantastic input for our work, together with the report of the Secretary General, the 69/277, that contains also beautiful elements that I'm sure everybody can agree, so we can actually continue to address in a way the needs of migrant, in this case, migrant children and adolescents. I understand that when it comes to the Convention on Migrant Workers, and here I just would like to salute the work of the committee. My country is one of those 47. Being as the president of the committee just said, migrant workers, not being just migrant workers, but specifically human beings, the protection of those who are in migration and their working status should not just go as a particular task of the regime that is covered by the Convention on International Migrants. As I was just coming back to my original remarks, human rights are erga omnes and should be respected by everybody, regardless they have acceded to a particular document or not, and regardless or whether you are a country of origin, destination, or transit, human beings are all the time human beings. That said, obviously, we have to take into account the responsibility that we countries of origin have to make sure that the push factors are actually going to be addressed. And here, yes, as you have mentioned before, we have untold levels of violence and things that have to do with economic and social policies that we need to address. And that is our share of the big task that we have ahead of us. But of course, we need also that countries of transit and countries of destination also work together so we can deal with this. And thank you again. This is going to be really timely for the efforts that we're doing here at the Third Committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ruben, for that. The gentleman to your right, yes.
First of all, thank you very, very much for organizing this panel. It has been really interesting. My name is Arturo Requesens. I work in the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And I only have a couple of small questions. One, whether there's a specific reference in these principles or on guidelines on indigenous migrants. That's my question number one. And my question number two is whether there's any intention to transform these principles and guidelines into a more legally binding document, such as a protocol to the Convention on Migrant Workers. Those are my questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Last question, yes. Lady. No.
Paul from the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur, and I'm chair of the NGO Committee on Migration here at headquarters. My question has been touched a bit by Michelle and Kathy and by the delegate from El Salvador. I'm thinking here that we're very much convinced when we're working with the Sustainable Development Goals that we need the MOI, the means of implementation. And as I looked through the document before coming here, I was thinking of three things, and there are three among many. For example, in many places, voluntary departure or voluntary return simply is a tool for deporting huge numbers of people at once without any kind of due process. I'm thinking of children in detention, and I'm thinking how much work has been done yet. Some has been done, but there needs to be a tremendous amount more on alternatives to children in detention. And then I'm thinking of what's happening on our southern border, but it's not confined to there, and that is true asylum seekers who are being turned away in large numbers, in direct defiance of international law. So my question is, for those on the panel, how would you see us in a larger scope? I am aware that one size doesn't fit all. Building capacity to address these issues. Thank you very much.
I thank you for that question. I will go back to the panel and we are going to conclude. We are running out of time. So I don't know. Maybe from my right, I'm going to start with Mr. Carrion Mena, very brief, less than a minute, if possible. I'm so sorry for the shortage of time. Thank you.
I understand. Well, the main issue of the convention and the committee is the number of state parties. And the especially we lack of the countries, the developed countries receiving migration. Because in my case, for example, Ecuador is at the same time a receiving, ascending, transit country. But we need to really work on this issue and really obtain what we want is to have the ratification of the countries, the developed countries, that have already their legislation that is in accordance with the convention. And I'm thinking especially on Europe. Thank you.
Gracias, Señor Carrion Mena. Mr. Jans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and panelists, but also for the questions just received. What I would take home from today's debate, and I couldn't agree more, is what Michelle referred to as the need to come up with a needs-first approach. In today's world where it is difficult to cross continents, whether we're talking deserts and the hazards that are associated with that, or ultimately hazardous sea journeys, there will always be mixed movements of peoples, and we need to ensure that before we determine their legal status, if they are in dire needs, that they are rescued wherever they may be, regardless of their status. I think hence the emphasis on needs first is for me the clarion call that I'm sure all of us here at the panel would happily endorse. Thank you.
Thank you. Very briefly, Ambassador Mike-Harting.
Well, just in 1 minute to say that I found this discussion extremely useful. Evidently, when it comes to migration as such, there are, for obvious reasons, differences of emphasis and also differences of views on some of the aspects of migration. We certainly believe in our part of the world that states are entitled to regulate economic migration and also regulate the social security and other benefits that go with it. But the essential point for us is that we are speaking here of the human rights of people, whatever the circumstances are under which they find themselves in such a situation. On the one hand, we have the issue of asylum seekers, and the rights of asylum seekers have to be respected under all circumstances. And whoever comes to a place, if he's in a situation of distress and if his fundamental human rights are at risk, they have to be protected. And I think on this, there is consensus on this panel and consensus in this room, and that I found very useful, and I'm particularly grateful for the additional work that the Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights is doing in this field. Thank you very much.
I thank you. Ms. Klein-Solomon.
Thank you very much for the excellent questions and comments. Just two very short points. Mary Jo asked, how do you build the capacity to make sure that this can happen? The first way is to make sure migration gets recognized in the post-2015 development agenda. Make sure that first, migrants are not left behind so that there is disaggregated data, regardless of migratory status, to ensure that the rights of migrants are protected. And secondly, take a look at 10.7, the target, about planned and orderly, responsible migration programs and the capacity that's needed to implement them. And the third point, and I want to come back to something that was said by the representative of El Salvador, you made a very important point that I hope people focus on, and that's the need for states to work together, countries of origin, transit, and destination, to deal with particular flows, because there's a real capacity to improve people's lives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Taktaktan.
Thank you. Also, two brief points. With regard to the question of gaps in protection, I might say that in the drafting of the document, at one point, this document was twice the length that it is now. And it was actually with an eye to some breadth and to be more inclusive. In thinking it through and after reading it through, it became much more focused, and that's where we have the 25 pages, but with the intention that it is still inclusive. If we look at the language, we feel it can be interpreted in a way that it will cover what might be perceived as gaps, and that's in the application and how we utilize it. Second point, we're very much aware that this is called a conference table document. We would very much like to see this have stronger recognition, and I can only turn it over to colleagues here to find ways to elevate its stature. I think it will certainly not diminish how we utilize it, but we do believe it deserves much stronger official recognition, and we hope there will be the means to do that really in the coming months, not to let the opportunity and momentum slip by. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Simonovic, the floor is yours for concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me first of all thank you, Matteo, for ably chairing this. And if I may share with all of you, he was supposed to be at the luncheon with Secretary General, and he opted to be with us here. Yeah. So I thank him very much, and I would like to thank all of you. These guidelines were produced on the basis of input we were receiving from our UN partners, other organizations, member states as well as civil society. They will live or they will die depending on support that is extended to their implementation. And yes, they were introduced in Brussels to the European Union. I hope we will introduce them through our field presences in Southeast Asia, in the Americas. However, it is important that they are adopted also psychologically, that there is an ownership of member states as well as civil society. I am glad that in cooperation with El Salvador, who is facilitating, ambassador is facilitating a resolution of migrant children, we can push for some references to be included in this resolution. We want it to be a living document that evolves and has an impact. So far, the idea is not to transform it into a legally binding text, but let us do whatever we can for mainstreaming. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. I see the ambassador from Nepal. I apologize for the room is yours, ambassador, so we have to evacuate it quite soon. Thank you, and my apologies for trespassing on your hospitality. Thank you.